Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 217 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I am really excited to bring you my interview with Bradley Robinson, who is Chud's Barbecue, that's Chud's BBQ. This would have been a cool interview simply because he works with Evan Leroy and Sori Lewis at Leroy & Lewis in Austin, Texas, because of everything that they're doing, and I'll mention that in a second. But he also has a very interesting backstory and how he got from New Hampshire to Austin, and then how he started working with Evan, but also the pits that he builds. He essentially has four different pits that he builds. He has a backlog for a year now on his pits. He's building these at home. He's done about 25 to 30 pits, and he has a backlog of 18 right now, which is extraordinary. But also, he has a ridiculously great YouTube channel. I would jump from this. Usually, you're not supposed to say this, but jump from this and subscribe to his YouTube channel. I'll have a link below. It's Chud's BBQ. youtube.com/chudsbbq. Tons of informative ones. He has one on pit building, then he has a lot on food and the food that they're putting out at Leroy & Lewis and stuff that he loves and he's digging. It's really great. Super informative. You could tell the way he works is he breaks things down, and that's how he breaks his YouTube videos down. I highly recommend it. It's one of the best. So anyways, I digress. Bradley is a man of many different things, and I'm glad that he sat down with us to talk and explain all those different things. With Leroy & Lewis, they also have a Patreon page, which I highly recommend. I think it's $30 a month. I joined for the first day. Amazing, incredible videos from Evan and Brad that really, really get to the heart of what Leroy & Lewis is all about. Crazy recipes that you would never see. I've never seen on YouTube anywhere else. That's definitely worth an investment, and also it helps out Leroy & Lewis. And essentially, I had an interview with Sawyer that'll be coming up. It pays for an employee. It's worth it even if you didn't even use it, but it's worth checking out. So he's at Leroy & Lewis. They have the Patreon page. He has his YouTube stuff. He builds pits. I don't think he ever sleeps. I know I'm forgetting something in this intro, but we'll get into it in the interview. Thank you, Brad, for taking the time. And the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast and YouTube show is brought to you by Treaty Oak Distilling. They're available at treatyoakdistilling.com or at their location in Dripping Springs. It's good to get out as much as you can, as you can get out safely. They have 26 acres, so it's very spread out. They'll be distilling again right now. They had turned their operation over to hand sanitizer. They have bourbon, they have rum, they have gin. They also have beer, they have wine. Those things are just available, beer and wine, on property. They have Alice's Restaurant, which is a barbecue and live fire restaurant. They're really great people over there, too. They care about their business. They care about the customers. It's a family over there. It's treatyoakdistilling.com. And I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with tons of content, tons of fun stuff. Get lost in it. I have all my podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, but a bunch of other content, stories, collections, compilations, a lot of new stuff coming out, so I'd check it out. If you're digging these, after you've subscribed to Chud's BBQ, please subscribe to my channel. That way you don't miss out. I'm doing 2 to 3 of these per week, and that way I get feedback and I can keep doing these. I really appreciate it. I'm on all the social media at Kevin's BBQ Joints. But at the end, stay safe. Brad, thank you so much for doing this. Good morning, Bradley. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's start off, too. Like, is your family safe? How are things where you're at?
Yeah, my life, my family, my friends, everyone's doing pretty well. Nothing too close to home, which is nice. On the business side, it's been a roller coaster, you know, just like anyone else. The first few weeks, it was play it week by week, see what's going to happen. Then it turned into play it day by day, see what's going to happen. Pretty soon you're just checking the news every hour to see if we're going to be able to serve dinner tonight, kind of thing. But, you know, especially because we're, you know, a 7-8 person team, including the owners at Leroy & Lewis, it's just, I was nervous for a minute there.
Yeah. It seemed like, though, the two of them, like Sawyer and Evan, are really, like, savvy. And I'm sure their wheels were rolling in the moment. Like, things were starting to kind of, you know, disintegrate around the United States and the world. I could see that they were just like, okay, we'll do this, and then we'll try this. So, and I'm sure that you were part of those conversations.
Right. I mean, yeah, I was never worried about the business coming through, but it was just because, like you said, I mean, as soon as any obstacle comes, we're taking a left turn. You know what I mean? Like, the food truck is a left turn. You know, it was originally going to be a brew pub, all this stuff, but it was like, all right, well, that's not going to happen for a few years, so let's go into a food truck. Then, oh, there's a global pandemic. We'll start doing a Patreon and a podcast. All right, we'll start delivering food to you.
Do you guys do delivery yourselves or do you use a company?
We did delivery for, we talked about doing it for a while, but it, because we're such a small staff, we'd have to outsource it and it just didn't make sense. We did it one day for our third year anniversary. Mostly it was just pick up, curbside, but yeah, you know, Cosmic shut down. So then we're just in a parking lot again, which is funny because it brought us back to our roots. That's where we started, you know what I mean?
That's crazy. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't think the delivery aspect would work well. I think it makes more sense to have people come and pick it up. Or can people dine at 50% now? Or what is it?
Yeah, Cosmic is back up and running. We got all three food trucks back. They're at limited capacity, but they're back to normal hours, which is really nice. Because for a minute there, they were open noon to 8. But our food truck opens at 11, so we were kind of dealing with the over-the-fence business.
Oh, is that you guys had to do that?
Yeah. Well, this is the first normal-ish week in a long time, and it feels really nice to be back there. And because, you know, that's the whole thing about barbecue is half of the fun is serving the people, seeing the smiles on their faces and, like, watching people enjoy the food that we put so much effort into. And when you strip that away, it just really turns into a grind, and it was kind of dismal for a minute there.
So where did you grow up?
So grew up in a small town, Lebanon, New Hampshire.
Wow.
Born and raised.
What was that like?
It was really nice. New Hampshire's a very safe place to be. It's New England. It was just, you know, family life, small town. It's a great place to raise a family, not a fun place to be an early adult, you know, not a fun place to spend your 20s.
I mean, there's just not a lot to do. Is that why? Is it, or?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, if you want to see a concert or eat some good food, like, Boston was your best option, and that's a 3-hour drive.
Oh, shoot.
But, like, just like any small town, it's like you have your pizza joint, you have your one or two good restaurants, and other than that, you're going to Applebee's on your birthday. You know what I mean?
Well, you wouldn't think of, like, going in New Hampshire going to Applebee's, but I guess it's everywhere. But it's interesting because I've never met anybody from New Hampshire, and I've always wondered, I know it's like kind of like a destination. People like to travel through it for, you know, to see the leaves, right? Can you guys, the fall leaves?
It's beautiful up there. I mean, everything, like, I lived right on the border of New Hampshire and Vermont, and just driving through during the foliage, New Hampshire, beautiful place to be. It's also really cold for most of the time.
Now, I have an ex-girlfriend that moved to Vermont, and she posts photos every so often, and it was, like, snowing, like, 3 weeks ago in Vermont still.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got off the phone with my parents yesterday, and they said it was, like, 40 degrees. I'm like, it's June! Like, what's going on?
In California to Texas is 110.
Yeah, I told them it was 107 yesterday. They're like, oh, my goodness.
How did you make your trek out to Texas? And were you into barbecue growing up there? Like, was there even any culture of that anywhere around you?
No, man. I had no, like Chili's baby back ribs. I never even had them. Just hearing about it was the only time I ever heard about
that
ribs.
Damn commercial.
You know what I mean? Yeah, right? But, yeah, no, I was not a cook growing up. I was a notoriously bad cook for most of my upbringing. Like, my claim to fame was the one time I tried, I made box brownies and just failed. I don't know what I did. Too much oil now that I look back on it.
This is the moment that people that can't cook and that can't do, like, that can't cook well are like, well, I could do barbecue maybe. That's cool. That's awesome.
Right.
That's
inspiration. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Give it a shot. It's real easy. Easier than box mix brownies. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
How did that come out? How did that happen?
Well, long story short, I grew up in New Hampshire, went to college in Maine for audio engineering. After graduating, I was for a city with a good music scene so I could use my audio engineering degree and, you know, warmer city.
Yeah.
Opposite of New England, just after 22 years, just looking for a more fun place to spend my time. And Austin, Texas just seemed to be the right place to be. You know, we're looking at all these different cities, thinking Portland, thinking like North Carolina, just going anywhere, you know. And Austin just, we came down for a visit, and we just had such a good time. And I'm just like, this seems like the place to be.
What year was that?
This was 2012.
Okay. So Austin was a little different than it is now. Not as crowded, but.
Right. I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, the main draw moving down here was the cheap living back in 2012. You know, we found a 3-bedroom house for like $1,100 in South Austin. It's like, right on. That went up every year since we've been down here. But
are you at the same place still?
No, I moved a couple years back. I live a little further south now. That's the way the city's going.
So then were you getting jobs and stuff? Was that something that was easy? Because the music scene in Austin's awesome, but was that hard to get work?
It was really hard, yeah. I mean, me and my best bud who I grew up with, went to college with, we were talking about moving to Austin, and we were trying to find jobs and find a place to live from New Hampshire, and we were just having no luck because we don't know the city. No one's going to take you seriously.
You're not there yet, so they can't take you seriously.
Yeah, and well, eventually, like, it was November or something, and we're having no luck, and we're just living in my parents' basement as college graduates. We're like, this is not a good look. So we just packed up my hatchback with everything we could fit, and we just drove to Austin.
Nice.
We said, let's just give it a shot. You know, we had nowhere to stay. We had nothing lined up. And it was such a fun adventure, and it was scary. But
yeah.
Eventually, we found a place to live, we got jobs, and now here we are. So it worked out for the
best.
Did
you live in the car for a while?
Yeah, we slept in the car for, it took about 2 weeks to find a place. So we were calling in friends of friends of friends, like for a couch for a night. We slept in the park one night, you know, it was, and then eventually we just booked a really cheap hotel or a motel for like half a week. And it was so sketchy. We would take turns sleeping so we could kind of keep an eye on the car because there was like gunshots in the background. It was a rough situation.
Wow, I didn't know you came from that's wild. So then did you get like audio engineer jobs or working at like a studio or something?
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's the other thing is cracking into the audio industry is not something you can really do on Craigslist or with a resume. You know what I mean? It's all about who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And coming in fresh with, especially like not knowing anyone in town, it was really tough. But eventually we did both land jobs. I found a job with a guy who had a home studio and a bunch of live sound equipment. He was just kind of like a one-man team doing, you know, setting up PAs for schools and
oh, wow.
It's like gigging, like random, super random.
Such a hustle,
it was,
wow.
God, it was a lot of fun because, like, you know, I did sound for a high school prom. I DJ'd a T-ball game.
Yeah, you could check all those off the list.
There's some good gigs. You know, I did sound for the Kerrville Folk Festival. That was really fun. Got to hang out with, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Really?
And, like, there were some good gigs there, but at the same time, it was freelance work. So, inconsistent money, and mm-hmm. It was just a grind and a hustle for a while there.
So, then at that time, were you dabbling in either cooking or just eating great barbecue? Because I'm sure as soon as you came, you realize there's some good stuff here.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like barbecue, like I said, really didn't have any meaning to me growing up. I'm just like, pulled pork? Sure. Yeah, it's good. It's fine. I'm not going to wait in line for it. But as soon as you start telling people that you're moving to Texas, the first thing they always say is, oh, you're going to try some of that Texas brisket. And I'll never forget this moment where someone said, are you going to try that Texas brisket? And I said, what's brisket? Like, you mean biscuits? I've had biscuits before. So I Googled brisket, and it was like 2012, so it was right before the whole barbecue boom happened. And I just remember seeing like clip art of these black pieces of meat, and I'm like, I like my steak medium rare, guys. Like, I don't know about that. Maybe I'll give it a shot, see if I like it.
People still, like, to this day, I'm sure, say, how come this is undercooked, or this is, or like overcooked, or like, I think people, a lot of people don't even understand the process. Oh, they'll see a smoke ring on, oh, the redness on the chicken, and they'll think it's...
Yeah, this must be raw. But, yeah, so eventually, when we were house hunting down here, and we had just watched that No Reservations episode where Bourdain goes to Franklin and John Miller's place. And we're like, all right, that looks pretty good. Maybe we'll give it a shot. And we went to Jay Miller, which was on South First Street, but that just happened to be opening week of Law Barbecue.
John Lewis's brisket.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the aha moment that you hear people talking about, the moment that changed it all.
Yeah.
Like, it just changed everything. Like, it changed my view on food. You know, I didn't know that. It was, you know, when you see something or eat something that you didn't know existed and you're 25 years old and you're just like, I can't believe I've wasted my whole life not knowing that this was a thing.
it's really sad, but also too, it's exciting because you know that you can have this and that you're, and that there's places that you can have, but it does suck that, like, what have I been doing my whole life eating crappy food? Yeah. And especially if that all there is really Applebee's up in.
And nowadays I see like 2-year-olds eating beef cheeks, Leroy and Lewis. I'm like, you lucky bastard.
I know. They don't get it. They don't know.
I'm like, oh, I'm just growing up like that with that. Okay.
So with that epiphany, did you decide then you want to build a pit or something? Or like can cook more?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty gradual from there. As soon as I started eating at La Barbecue, then I was trying all the other barbecue in town. I'm talking to the pit masters, and then I kind of get a feel for it that it's just super simple, like meat, salt, pepper, smoke. Mm. And it was just, there's something so intriguing about it. I'm like, I need to learn how to cook this for myself, right? Yeah. A couple months later, my twin sister bought me a little Brinkman water smoker for our birthday.
Oh, wow.
And that's what started it all. All right.
A couple people have started on the Brinkman. I've talked to some people that have started on that. There's a place like close by my house that uses one still.
Really?
It's not the best.
If you don't know anything about anything, it's a good place to start because you just plug it in and you have no control over anything. So it's like, all right.
It's like a weird easy bake oven or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what kicked it off. Started doing my first ribs, my first pork butt, first chicken, first brisket, all that good stuff, and quickly burned through it. So then it was time to move on to the next pit. Which, again, I couldn't really afford anything worthwhile, so I just moved on to a Weber kettle,
Okay. Which
was a step up, because now I'm cooking with coal, cooking with wood chunks, and you can get a little more space, mm-hmm. got a little offset, a little airflow going mm-hmm. on. Actually, the first, 20 photos on my Instagram page are all me cooked on the Weber, which I think is pretty fun, so you can really, track it back.
Interesting, yeah, maybe I'll scroll all the way down, I could show some photos.
And then, after that, the Weber, I tell people, learning how to cook barbecue on a Weber kettle is, high-altitude training. Mm-hmm. If you can cook a brisket on that, then once you move to an offset, life will be easy.
Because you understand the basic concept.
Right, and it's just so much more difficult. Briskets take twice as long because it's thin metal, you're trying to deal with coals instead of logs. But so then it was time to move on to an offset, and at this point I'm at Friedman. So throughout my early 20s, I was working, doing audio gigs, that kind of started tailing off. So then I was working, just started bartending and working in the service industry while freelancing. And life was just getting hectic and unpredictable. And I said, I need to do something that I really care about. And I'm trying to think about, what do I do with my life? And as I'm having this conversation with myself, I'm cooking a rack of ribs. I'm maybe I should give this barbecue thing a shot.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. It's really fun. And so I hopped on Craigslist. I saw Friedman's was hiring. And I went in. I had a whiskey. I talked to Evan. And he said, all right, come in for a stage on Thursday.
Was Chris there too?
Yep, Chris was there too. Okay. So then I went out to my car and I Googled what is a stage. And that means show up tomorrow and work a shift for free.
For free.
All right, that's awesome. And I did that, got the job. It was Evan and Chris. And they were pretty low staffed at that point. I was the first of a few different hires that really kind of kicked that place up a notch.
Trying to think of who else came through during that time.
So I started working there, and within the year, that's when Lane started and mm-hmm. Jalen came in. Joel Garcia came in, and then we just had the all-star studded cast that was brief moment in time at Friedman's.
Did Jordan come through for a week or something, or did 4 or 5 days?
I may have seen him. I don't remember him,
but
I know he came through and worked with Evan for a bit. It might have been right before I got there.
Gotcha, okay.
But, so many, Evan loves bringing people in from all over the world to just come hang out. So there's been I've met so many people, it's hard to keep them track.
I still am going to write a blog piece called The 6 Degrees of Evan Leroy, and it's all about all the people that are connected to Evan. It's it really is, it's amazing how many people have said, oh, then I worked with Evan for 2 days, or I worked with Evan for a year. And I'm like, hey, wait a second, what, all these people have worked with Evan?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, for a while, it was either you're connected to the Franklin team, or you're connected to the Miller family in some way. And now I think Evan's quickly becoming that third option.
Mm-hmm.
If you're anywhere successful in barbecue, you're connected to one of those 3 points.
That's true. When working at Friedman, what was that like? Because when I talked to Lane, he said that it was kind of nerve-wracking that first couple of days. He was nervous. It was tough.
Yeah, it was crazy. I walk in there and I've never cooked on an offset, never kettle in the backyard. It's that classic thing where everyone's telling me, dude, this is some of the best brisket I've ever had. I'm like, all right, I think I can do this. I think I got the chops. And then all of a sudden, going from a Weber kettle to 2 500-gallon smokers that are both completely different. It's like, okay, time to learn fire management on the fly.
Evan, he doesn't send you to the wolves. He gives you a little bit of advice, right? Or does he just say
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I'm just trying to walk in like I know what I'm doing. But yeah, between Evan and Chris, they both have very different cooking styles, but their morals are the same. You know what I mean? It's all about getting the best bark and the highest quality of everything. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was my first kitchen job ever. So just that learning curve as well of like the hustle and the sweat, and especially like working in a smokehouse for the first time.
Great knowledge.
It was an experience. Yeah, it was a lot of fun though, man.
So then from there, did you when Freeman's closed, did Evan leave before they closed?
Yeah, so I started in 2015, fall of 2015, and then the next August is when Evan left to start Roy and Lewis.
Yeah.
And then, so then Chris took over, and he brought it through November before he left to go join Style Switch. So then I took over after him. That was the most nerve-wracking part of Freedman's, is all of a sudden I'm, you know, a year and a half into my cooking career in general, and all of a sudden they hand me the reins, and they say, all right, you're now head pitmaster, executive chef of Freedman's. Oh, by the way, the top 50 list comes out in 6 months. I'm just like, what?
And you have to order all the order everything. And,
yeah, exactly. No training, because everyone just kind of left. And when and then when Chris and Evan left, that's when Lane left and Joel left. So all of a sudden, the star-studded crew just fell down. And it's all on my shoulders to make sure that all their hard work still pushes through till May, till that top 50 list comes out. I buckled down. I was like, all right, I'm going to open every single day for the next like 9 months to make sure that everything comes out as good as possible. And that's really when I cut my teeth as a pit master, just doing trimming every brisket for 9 months, every rack of ribs for 9 months, just like really powering through it. Because I knew that they'd never let me live it down if Freedman's didn't make the top 50 when it was under my watch.
And I think that Daniel had said that in November, December is kind of when they were scouting places. They were giving people that maybe January would be the last part of that when they were actually making their final. So you.
Yeah, I mean, they kept coming. I mean, I saw Daniel come through even like later in the year, because they do like three or four stoppings just to check consistency. And especially because they knew that there was pitmaster changes going on at Freedman's. Mm-hmm. Like they just kept coming back. I saw Jimmy Ho coming in and eating.
And
I saw
Daniel
Vaughn's eating out of his trunk. I'm just like, oh God, I'm so nervous. But I made the list.
Yeah, made the list, and that which is awesome. So then, how were you there when Freedman's closed?
No, I left shortly after the list came out.
Okay.
Because they were trying to go in different directions. They told me, you know, they're opening up. Trying to open up another barbecue spot down south. Yeah, that place was not going in a good direction, we'll say. So that's when I kind of, when I left Freedman's, then I worked at Micklewaite for about a month.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then I was trying to find a new place to work. So I talked to Lane because he had left and went to work with Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because Lane went there too.
Yeah, so Lane got me a job at Micklewaite, but he couldn't really hire me on full time. So I was just kind of part-time there. So I was like, what else can I do for work? So then I started working with Cade, now of Guest Family, who is at East Side Tavern, I believe it's called, on the East Side. And I was doing brisket shifts there, kind of bouncing back and forth, waiting for one of them to like offer me a salary and bring me on full-time. And then Evan called. He said, all right, let's reunite. Leroy and Lewis needs your help. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Nice. That's okay. So that must have been a good feeling.
Yeah, it was nice. Be back with Evan. Familiar. I mean, Evan and I are neighbors, so we're good buds.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
right down the street.
Ah, so you could like egg his house or TP his house if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Nice. So then at that time, were you dabbling at all in pit building?
So yeah, when I was at Freedman's, right before Evan left to open up Leroy and Lewis, he bought a welder and bought a 500-gallon propane tank and said, I'm going to build the smoker for my new business. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. And then because he had the welder, I obviously needed a backyard smoker. And this is before Mill Scale, before Moberg were really big. So I'm like, I don't want to spend, you know, $600-$700 on an Academy backyard or a Home Depot pit that's just going to burn through in a year. Like my next pit, I want to last a lifetime. So I'm like, so I started looking into welding and pit building. I'm like, this can't be that hard, right? Evan's got a welder. Perfect. So I asked him if I could borrow his welder. And then in about 2 weeks, I whipped up that pit that you see in my YouTube videos. And
Still
holds strong. Yeah, still cooks great.
Where did you get all the steel and stuff? Where did you get the metal? Like, was that something that you just went on Craigslist and found it or something?
So yeah, Craigslist. I hopped on Craigslist. I was looking for a 120-gallon propane tank because that's like the perfect size. And I was looking for like a good 6-8 months. I couldn't find one. So eventually I said, all right, I'll just get 150-gallon because those are pretty common around here, or at least they were back in 2015.
Exactly, not anymore.
And the good thing about the 150 is that it's like an 8-foot tank, but it's 24 inches wide. So if I lobbed one third of it off, I could use that third as the firebox. True. And have a perfect size backyard pit. That was a big moment when my roommates came out and there was a guy dropping off a, you know, 1,000-pound propane tank in the driveway. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to build a smoker. They're like, oh, God. Just rolling their eyes, like thinking it's just going to sit in the driveway for the next 2 years.
When you built it, did you tweak it then after to make, like, to your, or did you tweak it along the way? Like, how does that work for someone that's just randomly building a pit? Like, how do you know? I guess you had used them at Friedman's, so you kind of knew airflow and you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it came out a lot better than I was expecting it to. Because, like I said, there was that, like, 8-month period where I was looking for the perfect propane tank. And throughout that, I was like, I just put a lot of thought into it. Like, how am I going to make the hinges? And, like, had everything written down and designed in my head and in a little notebook and had procedures and, like, the order of operations of how I was going to do it. Like, I really nerded out about it. So by the time it came to actually build it, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And it worked out really well. Since then, now that I've built, like, 20, 30 pits since then, I want to go back and tweak it up. You know, like, the door handles are a little too far back. And this, that, you know, the handle on the thing. I kind of like keeping it.
Yeah, it's a classic. Like, it's, yeah, you'll always keep that. That would be cool to keep it the way it is. When did you start selling them? Or did people see that? And then, or were you selling them along the way?
Well, once I built the first one, you know, I posted it on my very small Instagram account. And then someone's like, do you build those? Do you sell those? I'm like, I could. But it was a couple of years until I started selling them. Once I built the first one, I'm like, this is pretty fun. So then I'm kind of keeping an eye out because I'm used to looking for tanks. And I found another tank. It was a smaller one, like an 80-gallon tank. I'm like, I'm going to just buy that tank and build another one. Just take my time with this one, see if it comes out any better. And by the time I was done with it, that's when Chris McGee hit me up. And he said, my meat guy, Mike Ruffino, is looking for a pit for his backyard. I'm like, well, I've got one that I'm building right now. I could sell that to him. And he's like, perfect. So Mike came by, looked at it, bought it. And that was the first pit I ever sold. So thanks to Chris McGee for starting off Chud Pips.
Yeah, well, so it's all connected. And Chud is what? Chud is a nickname?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a really lame story, but back before I was working at Friedman's, I was just posting pictures of meat all the time, and I was like, I just need to create a separate account that I can just put pictures of my barbecue on that's kind of plugged into the barbecue world.
Yeah.
So I'm not, like, just bombarding my friends and family with pictures of ribs all the time. And I didn't want to call it something cute like Brad's Barbecue or, you know, something like that. So me and my buddies, we're all just, like, drinking beers, talking about, like, what's a good Texas-sounding name? The word Chud, we were just throwing around at the time because we thought it sounded funny. There's no real definition. You know, there's a movie called Chud. There's, like, a political thing about Chud, but we're just using it as just, like, a, oh, go clean the Chud out of the pit, blah, 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 you know what I mean? And we're like, Chud's Barbecue. Sounds legit.
It does
sounds
sound.
Like there's a big hairy, sounds like there's a sweaty guy in the back with a big knife. It does. And we just, honestly, it sounded funny, and that became my Instagram handle. And then since then, it's just kind of, it's stuck. And it's kind of nice having, like, a brand that's not my actual name.
Yeah, yeah.
Although everyone thinks my name is Chud, so that's kind of, I wish I chose a better name so people would come up to me and go, hey, Chud.
But I did, honestly, at the beginning, I did think you're, at least, I thought it was either your last name or something, I thought. And it's also funny, too, you're drinking out of
quart container.
It's a quart, right? So, yeah, and it's very restaurant-ish of you to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's how I make sure I get a gallon in every day. Drink four of those.
As long as you don't drink out of, like, a bus tub or something.
Yeah, right.
as you're progressing, how did you, I want to talk about what you offer for the pits, and then I want to talk about your YouTube stuff, and then I also want to talk, though, about the chicken too. How did the chicken part come out? Because I know that you're famous, or at least amongst us, you're famous for the chicken. How did that, like, did you just get into it somehow? Like, how did?
Yeah, the chicken. Well, one day, my roommate at the time, it was his birthday, and I asked him. I always cook him a meal on his birthday. I'm like, what do you want this year? He's like, I want fried chicken. I'm like, all right, cool. So I just did my best to make fried chicken, and it just came out terrible. And I thought it was easy. You know, just get some chicken, throw it in some flour, fry it up, and it was just. I mean, it was obviously still tasty, but I was not happy with it. And then Evan came by that day. Now I'm feeding a chef this terrible fried chicken that I just made. And, like, I was like, all right, I need to buckle down and get a good fried chicken recipe because this is unacceptable. I need to know. I live in Texas. I live in the South. I need to know how to make fried chicken.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same mentality that I took towards pit building or towards barbecue, where it's like, all right, let's take it apart to every single level and just up the quality and try every different method until we have, you know, the best product possible.
That's great advice.
And so, you know, with fried chicken, I started out just eating all the fried chicken in town. And I kind of quickly realized that there's not that much great fried chicken in Austin. At least back when I started doing it, there wasn't. Since then, you know, Spicy Boys, Temple 22 has come along. That was a really fun experiment, you know, just trying, like, all right, let's try buttermilk today. All right, let's try a lemon juice brine today. Let's do this. Let's try an egg wash. Let's try breadcrumbs. Let's try rice flour. And just
that's
just
awesome.
Trying everything I could possibly do to make the best possible fried chicken. And I came out with a recipe that I really enjoy. Evan really likes. Everyone seems to really enjoy it. So once I started that, it's also kind of the mentality where it's like, if we did this, this is a lot easier to do than barbecue. So if we could just do this at the truck every now and then, make some good money, add something the city doesn't really have a lot of, and the fact that it's fried and beef fat is just the real cherry on top.
How often do you guys serve that?
We try to do it quarterly, you know, every few months. You know, once in the fall, once in the winter, once in the spring, once in the summer. Just because, you know, we're
to make it special,
kind of? Got to keep the demand high, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, make it special, make it something that people want to come out for, and people do come out for, which is real nice. The last one we did a chicken sandwich pop-up like a month or two ago. It's right in the middle of the pandemic, so we just did fast food drive-through style. I kept telling everyone they needed to put roller skates on, but they didn't do it. But it was crazy.
We had that's a line. What I told Lane they should do for Goldie's. They should have because they wanted to do eat in your car kind of thing.
Oh, man. I need to make my way up there. Actually, Dylan hit me up a little while ago saying that I should do a chicken pop-up at Goldie's. So maybe we'll have to do that. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be a lot of fun. I've heard good things, and I know that Sheldon loves your chicken. I think, did he try to recreate it once, I think?
Yeah, man. Sheldon's a big fan of fried chicken. You know him and his cast iron, too. So the two just go hand in hand.
It's perfect. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Sheldon's a great guy. He's really fun to talk to because he's one of the only other pit masters and is also a pit builder.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that same kind of mentality where we know what we're cooking on because we cook on them instead of just...
That's true.
You know, thinking about airflow.
Yeah, that's important.
And he's just a really fun guy.
Yeah, and he's got such eclectic tastes and stuff. Every so often on these interviews, I've talked about him because I just love we text a lot and he'll send me really amazing. His taste in music is awesome. His taste in coffee and food. Yeah, it's interesting how some people evolve into a certain type where they have this eclectic taste. That's pretty fascinating.
Right.
Sounds like you are a similar animal.
I just, I tell people I've got this problem of turning my hobbies into professions, you know what I mean? I was like, pit building is fun, now I'm going to start selling pits. Chicken is fun, let's sell it.
So how often can you build pit? Are you right now in the process of building some pits for people?
Yeah. It's actually blown up a bit the last few months. That's the only downside about my pit building is that I work full time at Leroy and Lewis. So I only have, 2 days a week off and to build pits.
Yeah.
So it takes a good month or two to build one because, you know, that's reality, just 4 days, which is still pretty quick for me. So, yeah, I've got a list going on right now. I've got about 18 pits that I have lined up.
Oh, good for you. That is killer. So what's your if someone's watching right now and they wanted to place an order for a Chud box or whatever they wanted to order, would it be – are you looking at 9 months now? Or?
Yeah, I've been telling people 9 months. I told the guy last night that I'm at the year.
Okay.
I never thought I'd say that. But I mean, that's why trying to do a push on the mini Chud box because that one I can build in a day rather than a month.
So if someone wanted a mini Chud box, could they get it in 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Okay, you can't squeeze it in, right? You can't squeeze it.
Right. I mean, I'd like to, but that wouldn't be fair to the guy that ordered the 115 before him. You know what I mean? But yeah, I've still got 8 of those to build. So I'm thinking about just lining them all up and just going weld to weld, just build 8 at a time. Have a big party or something. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be fun. How many pits do you offer? What types? Is it 3 different types?
Yeah. So right now I do I do offsets and I do the direct heat pits. And right now I'm trying to limit. I'm limiting it to 2 of each. So I have the 65-gallon offset, which is kind of the step up from the Home Depot pit. Mm-hmm. It's still relatively thin metal, but it's got proper airflow. It's got a good design, and it's got everything's fully welded. And that's kind of my cheaper option. It only weighs like 300 pounds, so you can put it in the back of a pickup truck. Not too bad.
No, not bad.
And then for everyone that doesn't want that, they can move up to the 115 gallon, and that's like the real beast pit that I make. That's made out of 3/8 inch thick steel.
Wow.
So it's real heavy duty. It's got the insulated firebox, all the works, and that thing that weighs 1,000 pounds. So that one you need a trailer for.
Do they DM you for quotes for those?
Yeah. I'm in the process of making a website, but right now I'm just kind of going through Instagram. It's on the schedule.
And then the other one, the direct.
Yeah, for direct pits, I got the Chud Box, the OG Chud Box that we use at Leroy and Lewis. That one's just real basic, real simple. And then I got the mini version for the backyard guy.
And what are people using that one for?
That one's good for cooking ribs, chickens, pork butts. You can fit a brisket on there. You know, just kind of anything you want to do. It's really great because it's like the perfect size for fitting like maybe 3-4 racks of ribs on it. Mm-hmm. And direct heat ribs cook super quick, which is real nice.
True. From what I remember, didn't Jordan, right? Did he just got one, right?
Yeah, he's got a Chud Box. A
couple months ago or something.
Yeah, man, that was a loadout. That's a problem with it. He showed up at night and it was just, he's got a lifted truck and that thing weighs a good 400 or 500 pounds too. So I was trying to get that into the back of his truck. Carl, come help.
Yeah, I'm sleeping. What are you talking about? Cool. So that's a cool little side of your business. And I want to promote that once you have the website too, like, and as I mentioned, I have a pit section, so I want to promote that separately. But then, so with Leroy and Lewis, what are your hours right now? I want to know the hours and then I want to jump to the YouTube.
Leroy and Lewis, typically I've been working, you know, anywhere from 50 to 70 hours a week. But because of the massive list of pits I have to build and the Patreon videos and my YouTube stuff, we worked out a deal where I'm going to try and step back to roughly 40, 45 hours a week so I can focus in on all these other things, which has been real nice, honestly, because I was burning the candle at both ends.
So is that you too, as well as Leroy, or is it just like a group thing for the...
Yeah, it's a group effort. Usually the way it's kind of... been the last few weeks is I'll film my half at the commissary, like of making the food, prepping it, breaking down the pig, whatever it is I'm doing, and then Evan will film his half on the food truck, like doing the final cook and doing the plate up, stuff like that. So I'll edit my half, he'll edit his half, we'll put them together, and you really get a good view of the
It's the best Patreon page that I've seen. Like, and there's ones that don't have quite the content. You guys are putting out a lot of content, and the content that's already there is well worth the, I think I'm paying $30 a month or something. And it's, and it, knowing that it goes to you guys is awesome. That's like, it's a good way to support. I'll put links to that below because I think that people should sign up for that because it's rad. It's really good.
Yeah, well, that's what we were talking about when we first started talking about doing it. Because right when the pandemic hit, you know, it's like, all right, we need to start pulling out all the stops because we need to stay afloat. And Evan was talking about doing a YouTube series, and I was kind of already in the works on mine. So I'm like, let's do a Patreon series. That way we can actually make some money.
Yeah, YouTube takes time.
Yeah, it's going to take like 2-3 years to make money on YouTube, but Patreon right away. It's really cool because the Patreon can help so many different groups of people. Like if you're just like a barbecue fanboy, like watch us cook some hogs, you know, learn how to make sausage. If you are a restaurateur or you're thinking about starting a food truck, it's great because nothing is staged. It's a complete look at what we actually do for actual service. It's not like we bought Beef Cheeks just for this video like I'm doing here. It's like, this is like, we just put a camera in our daily life and you can really see like the pars we're doing and like the logistics of running a food truck. It's pretty cool.
It's rad. So I'll put a link to that. And I actually have a blog piece I've been writing on it about that I haven't posted because I'm like you. I do like 40 things at once. And so then finally, like a few of them come to the top and actually go out to the world. But so then your YouTube channel, let's talk about your YouTube channel.
YouTube channel. Yeah. That's been something that's been on my to-do list for the last few years because, you know, when I first started cooking before Friedman's, like watching YouTube was really how I learned about barbecue, like watching the history of barbecue, like the science of barbecue. There's a great video called The Science of Barbecue that really kind of clicked with me. And then right when I moved down here and started cooking, you know, late 2012 is right when Aaron started putting out all of his videos. And they just helped me out so much and helped everyone out.
Changed
so
the world,
like,
I think.
Sure,
yeah.
Like everyone you've talked to has seen those videos. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And I feel like, not trying to compete with them, but it's kind of continue what he was doing because like he literally changed the world. He turned like barbecue from this secretive competition secret rubs.
Yeah, elusive world, yeah.
And it's like, and now everyone's so open and friendly. We have festivals and it's so cool, but there's also so much more to explore. At the same time, I also feel like I have a pretty unique perspective on barbecue, coming from like out of state, like walking into this world, but also from a pit building perspective, from working at Friedman's, from doing the new school barbecue that we're doing at Leroy and Lewis. I feel like the content is pretty endless.
And those are really awesome videos. I'll put links to that. And I'm going to do a separate thing with those videos because they're entertaining, and it's the production value continues to get better and better. I think it's awesome. It's really, I can't imagine a YouTube channel that wouldn't help someone that wants to get into this business or is interested in learning more.
Right.
What was your most recent?
I just posted one yesterday of a brisket trim cheeseburger.
Ah.
Where I kind of took a really nerdy approach to making a cheeseburger. Talked about like how to like to grind your meat to the perfect consistency. I made my own American cheese because everyone, I say it in the video, but like the biggest flack we get for the L&L burger at Leroy and Lewis is like we're taking this Akiyoshi beef and like cooking it and searing it to perfection and then putting American cheese on top. And I'm a big fan. Like, I think American cheese is the only cheese that belongs on a burger.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Because nothing else has that meltability, that creaminess that the burger needs. So I made my own with some, like, sharp cheddar, turned it into the melty American slices. So there's some pretty
cool. That one's live right now, right? That's live, right?
Yep. Okay, yep. Cool. Went up on Tuesday morning. Every Tuesday morning is when the next video comes out.
So you're smart to do a schedule. I like put mine out whenever.
Right. Well, that was part of the reason why it took so long to really get this going is because one, I needed to build up the camera gear and learn how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then two is once I start, consistency, make sure I want to put one out every Tuesday morning, and just signing up for that is just adding something else to the to-do list. You know what I mean? So.
But actually, because you know that, and I should probably do the same, it gives you that incentive that you have to make sure you complete it before Tuesday so that it's
up. Right, exactly. And also, from a viewer's perspective, because like I said, I watch YouTube is kind of my main entertainment source for like learning stuff and all that. And the people that are consistent that I know are going to put out a video at this time every week, like it becomes part of my schedule too. Mm-hmm. So every morning, 8 a.m., if you want to see the video, like hopefully I can create some habits in people to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, that's awesome. What are all the different ways to get a hold of you?
The best way is on my Instagram page at ChudsBBQ. I respond to all my messages. If you have pit inquiries, that's the place to do it.
Okay.
If you want to see all the things I'm cooking, Roy and Lewis, if you want to know when the next fried chicken pop-up is, that's there. You can also go through my photos, see all the different pits that I build and all the different people I've sold pits to. So, also, you can hit me up at ChudsBBQ@gmail.com if you're not an Instagram guy.
Okay.
And Chud's Barbecue on YouTube. See everything I'm cooking. New video every week. Sausage coming out next Tuesday, so stay tuned.
Oh, right. Yeah, everyone loves that. So, and Chud's is spelled how?
Chuds.
Okay, so it's not double D. I don't know why you would, but
everyone thinks it's a double D. Not sure why. Maybe it should be.
I don't think it should be. Like Chud should be like Chad. I think it makes sense. So it's one D, and I think we've talked about it now for half a minute. So people should it'll be in their brain. It's Chud, Chud. And so, and then also, are you guys doing another new school barbecue class? Like, have you guys thought about that?
We just had a meeting about it last night. We were talking about, because we were planning on doing the August class, and we're trying to figure out if it's too soon, if people are going to be willing to travel. But I think the world has opened up enough at this point that we're gonna go for it. So stay tuned for an announcement about that.
Okay.
And maybe a smaller class rather than 30 people or something like that. Yeah, the last class was a lot of fun. We had people from all over the country. You were supposed to be there, man. I was looking forward to meeting you.
I know, so sad. I know, but my mom, I had to, I had my hotel, I had my plane, I had that book. So I think apparently still I have a credit with Sawyer for the class. So hopefully I'll be.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So yeah, hopefully this August we'll be doing another one.
Cool.
And it'll be even better than the last one. Because the last one we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants. You know, we've never really done that before. Like teaching 30 people while also being open with an 8-person staff. But everyone seemed to have a great time. We ate a lot of good food too, which is great.
Yeah, and I'll promote the hell out of that too, because that you guys, it's just there's something that you guys are doing that's different than everyone else. And I still feel like even though those in the know about you, not everyone, like I mentioned you, not everyone knows about you, and it's mind-boggling. But It's like you're like the hidden gem that's everyone knows about but doesn't know about. It's bizarre.
Right. It's funny. Like a lot of customers say that too. They come up to get beef cheeks or the brisket on the weekend or something, and they're like, "I still can't believe there's no line here."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, right now it's working out."
Yeah.
The people that know getting a good treat, but yeah. So hopefully, for Leroy and Lewis, where we keep the classes going, they're a lot of fun. We got Patreon going, and hopefully, brick and mortar is coming soon.
Awesome. So. Well, I wish you all the best. I'm so glad we finally got to talk, and I can't wait to hang out in person. But this is the second best thing. This is very coronavirus style or COVID style. But I appreciate everything you do, and I've watched you from afar, and I'm proud of you. I've loved your progression, so it's really cool to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's nice to meet you too. And yeah, hopefully we can meet this summer.
Yeah, definitely. And and say hi to Evan and Sawyer, and tell Evan that he's doing a good job with this podcast. It's killer.
Will do. Will do. Yeah, everyone, check out the New School Barbecue podcast. Evan's doing some cool work.
I'll edit that out. No, I'm just kidding. No. They should. It's rad. It's cool. And also too, it's like, it's someone that should always have had a podcast, really, because of its knowledge. I think that's, you know, I'm just like this guy. Right. I'm coming from the perspective almost like you, where I'm learning about, like, I'm coming from a different world, learning about all this, whereas he's, like, been in this for so long.
Yeah, it makes sense for the same reason that, you know, it's like coming from a cook's perspective to build pits. He's coming from a cook's perspective to make a podcast, people, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's rad. Well, cool. Well, have a great day. Have a good week.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, and I'm going to learn about cheeseburgers in a little bit.
All right.